good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, August 30th, 2022. Well, Dave is having some computer issues. He's trying to get his system up and running, rebooting, so he should be here in a few minutes. So he will join us when he gets here. So I'm going to go ahead and begin with the precious metal markets for today. And again, you know, they got hammered again. And in the New York spot price aftermarket, we're looking at 1724, down, what, $10 from the high today. Silver was $18.50. Down 37 cents. Platinum was down 18 at 857. And palladium took a hit 3%, 2,152. And I'm going to bring this about too. You know, we don't like to, you know, say, hey, you know, it's a down day, but look at the positives. But that's what I'm going to say. And if you look at the white metals, palladium was down 3%. Platinum was down 2%. Silver was down 2%. Gold was down 0.75%. And many will say, well, they don't go up as fast either. Well, you know, it's all about stability and trends. So, you know, there's different ways to look at things. And this all should be counted when you're making that decision to buy gold and silver. Everything should be included other than just silver is going to go to 500 and, you know, so forth. You have to look at the fundamentals, and those are one of the fundamentals for gold and silver. USDX today was up, you know, 108.79, not that much, but crude oil did fall $5 at 91.99. Paper markets today couldn't keep their gains. They were up a couple hundred points earlier today, and now you have the Dow closing down 308 points at 31,790. S&P was down 44 points at 3,986. The NASDAQ was down 134 at 11,883. Asian markets, Nikkei was the only positive. Germany's market, the DAX, was the only positive market. All of them were negative. Not by much, but they were still in the red territory. 10-year yield fell a little bit, but we're still over 3%, 3.108% for the 10-year yield. So, you know, it's we're just going to see. I think we're going to continue to see these types of markets until after the holiday, and it's going to be quiet. It's going to be a quiet week. And I think next week, I think most people will be back from vacation on Tuesday. They usually will take this week out heading into Labor Day. So it could be very active. And so give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. We always talk on job openings rise in July. And the number of job openings in the U.S. rose after 3 months of declines. Now, this is still a sign that the employers are still urgently seeking workers, despite the supposedly weakening economy and the high inflation. The increase that the government reported today will be a little bit of a disappointment for the Fed officials who are trying to cool everything. And it's just such a joke. It really is a joke. But we have to report what the news is. There were 11.2 million open jobs available on the last day of July, nearly 2 jobs on average for every unemployed person. This is up from just 11 million in June. Let's see if there was anything else. Higher pay has been passed on by many businesses to consumers in the form of higher prices, thereby intensifying inflation. We saw job openings rise in retail, warehousing and shipping, professional services, and in state and local education. Openings declined in manufacturing and healthcare. It's hard to believe that it's declining in healthcare, but I suppose. The number of people who quit their jobs declined slightly in July to 4.18 million. People typically quit jobs for new positions and, well, usually better pay. I think that's about it for that report. You know, we're beginning to see more home prices. They're beginning to fall. In June, home prices were 18% higher than the same time during the same month last year. Now, this is all according to the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller. That's a mouthful. Now, that's a weaker pace than in May of this year, which showed a 19.9% annual gain. Ten-city composite rose 17%, down from 19. So there was only one of the 20 cities reported higher prices, a higher price increase in the year ending in June. And really isn't a whole bunch more to say to that. June's growth rates for all three composites are at or above the 95% mercantile of historical experience for the first 6 months of 2022. In the last 35 years, only four complete years have witnessed increases that large. So while the drops may seem small, it is still the largest single month decline in prices since January of 2011. It's also the second worst July performance dating back to 1991. And I know why. You know, we have all of this debt, all of these mortgages and so forth. People were running in there with the low rates and everything, that we have credit scores still at all-time highs. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago that they changed a lot in ways that these credit scores were being taken. So it would push a lot of the lower credit scores higher. The national average credit score sits at an all-time high of 716. It's unchanged from a year ago. And, of course, we all know that the FICO score ranges from 300 to 850. But this is the first time since the Great Recession that scores didn't improve year over year. So we're leveling off back to the pre-pandemic norms, which is in and of itself not a red flag, they say, but the slight deterioration of debt levels. What we're keeping an eye on is if there's continued deterioration. Well, you can look at that different ways. Deterioration of debt levels means people aren't buying anything, so it's a bad, bad economy. And if it, so yeah, it's not a good thing. So, credit scores have held steady despite the dramatic rise in the cost of living. And, as we see more and more people relying on, you know, credit and credit card balances and all those kinds of things just to pay their monthly grocery bills. And really bad thing is when you buy groceries with your credit card, I mean, it's something that disappears. I mean, you can buy a chair, you'll still have your chair as you're, you know, as you're paying it off. But with your food, you use your credit card with food and food's gone in a week and you have nothing. So, you know, try not to use your credit cards for food unless you pay it off, you know, on a monthly basis. But it's not good to use your credit cards for food and groceries. So,
no, it's not.
No, it is not. I thought I heard a little tapping in that background. The little David is back.
Only 17 minutes to log on to the laptop today, Melody. Sorry, listeners. Hope everyone is well. Happy National Beach Day. Not feeling too beachy at the moment, however.
Well, I'll tell you. I knew you had to throw that in no matter when you got to the program, right?
That's right. Absolutely.
You had to tell us what today was all about.
It's and still is worth mentioning, even if you live 2,000 miles in the heartland.
Yes, or 2 miles, and you never get to the beach. Isn't that funny how things happen?
Yes, indeed, it is.
I was just finishing up about the credit scores that still at all-time highs, and I had mentioned that I believe they had changed the equation again somewhat so that these credit scores would be higher so more and more people could qualify for debt because that's what they were running out of. And so I was just, you know, finishing up a little bit there. We're as of April 22nd of this year, of April 2022, the average credit card utilization was just over 31%, up from 29.6 this year, Dave.
Yeah, now good scores generally anything above 670, ladies and gentlemen. A very good score is over 740, and anything above 800 to 850 is considered exceptional credit. Now, the average score of 716 by FICO measures anyway means that most lenders will consider your credit worthiness good, thus more likely to extend lower interest rates on whatever, your home equity loan, your car loan, your whatever loan. The question is, as Melody is suggesting, do you need a loan at all? Because sometimes things happen you're not anticipating, and all of a sudden you're in the hole. So be very careful. You know, if you do have any kind of debt, try and do your best to stay current on it until it's paid off.
Yeah, because most likely the government is not going to come in and help you with your debt. So,
excuse me.
You know, since Friday, Dave, the S&P 500 is down 5%.
Yeah, at least. It might even, that was
even more, probably more so than, you know, after today's close, perhaps.
Yeah.
And, you know, some might think that's a good thing, thinking it might be bringing down inflation. And some at the Fed, maybe that's the way they want it. As long as inflation remains the predominant economic concern, the Fed can be expected to push back on any surge in asset prices. But for now, it kind of creates a cap on how big and justified this market rally can be. Neil Kashkari, he's the president of the Minneapolis Fed, said that he was actually happy to see how Powell's speech was received. And he certainly wasn't excited to see the stock market rally. And after the last federal, after the last FOMC meeting, you know, the Fed's not going to be liked very well if the stock market crashes, which is just a matter of time until it does anyway. But people aren't going to like them very well, thinking that they did it in order to stem inflation. And so my question is, are real people more concerned about inflation or their retirement accounts and their investments?
Well, I think it's a very good and valid question. And for those closer to or at retirement age, I have a feeling that their retirement accounts are every bit as, if not more important than the cost of living per se. And it's an uncertain time. We'll talk about volatility later on in the program. It's one of the things to come out of Jackson Hole, the Fed's symposium last week, and was, you know, just the consensus that that's what the next few years are going to be like, and possibly ad infinitum, i.e. volatile. Right now, they say stock prices are the single most visible indicator of whether financial conditions are getting tighter, i.e. falling stocks, or looser, rising stocks. Fed officials like to insist that they don't target stocks per se, which I guess may be true in a narrow sense, although sure, there are plenty of examples of suggesting the exact opposite, that in fact they are very interested, and sometimes self-interested, in propping up the financial markets for their buddies, for themselves, and just I think they forget sometimes, too, that that's not Main Street. But whatever the case, Melody, I don't know about you, but I can't see any kind of rebound now coming in the stock markets, at least until the Fed's late September meeting. I say that knowing that with these stupid computer algorithms and high speed frequency trading algorithms, that who knows how these markets are going to react, or any given stock, to something that Powell or one of a Fed bank president or a board of governors member is, says that if they appear the slightest bit dovish, your computer program picks it up and ding, 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 ding. And all of a sudden, more stock and the overall market's up a little bit. At some point, we got to spend a little bit more time talking about options trading in the financial markets and why that's become so dangerous, whether it's everyday people, day traders, especially hedge funds, and just what it is doing to the market and driving all this uncertainty and volatility.
It's so simple and easy for these guys to run them up, and then they short it. I mean, they control the market so much to some degree, and so much of it. And if you lose it and you're in there, you lose everything. Then you got to take loans out to cover your margin calls. I mean, it's messy, and most people, it's great when you make money on it, but it's so easy to lose. And you know what? The percentages of who actually gains is so small.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even a 50-50. I mean, it's so, except those who control it, like you said, the big hedge funds and so forth. Yeah, they get away with it and so forth. But, for the most part, doing it on a small scale and so forth, you got to be really, really lucky. And most of you aren't. Most of the people aren't. And but you only hear those stories of those that are. You rarely hear the stories of the people that aren't. You know, just like when you go about Las Vegas, it's all about gambling, or any casino. It's all about, look at this. Even the lottery tickets. Oh, yeah, this guy became a billionaire. Did he ever pick up his ticket, I wonder? The guy who got the $1 billion?
Oh, I don't know.
No one claimed it as a week ago. He only has until like sometime in September to claim it. So I don't know if he has or not. But you only hear of those who win it. You don't hear of all the amounts of money that people put into these things and just lose and lose and lose. But we're at a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. My buddy's got me feeling like a jerk. $100 condo, $200 rent. I get a check on Friday, but it's already spent. Working for a living. Working for a living. Cause I'm working for a living.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoices of Integrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be. Lost my radiation.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and our telephone number at Discount Gold and Silver is 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Please make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter and blog that comes out on Friday. There won't be a newsletter on Monday because of the Labor Day holiday. So unless, Dave, you want to send something out Tuesday, it's but we usually hold off and give everyone a break, and so we can start that week fresh. So 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And something that I haven't done in a long time is, you know, we used to always do specials and everything on the programs, and I just haven't failed. I just have fallen down a little bit on that. So we're going to try to start putting together some good specials. It was difficult to find good pricing because the premiums are so high. And that's why I stopped, because you couldn't find any good deals out there in order to pass along to you. So I'm going to start maybe seeing what we can do to find something and start bringing them to you starting in September. So make sure you always have a pen and paper ready when you listen to the program for those specials. You know, I just want to touch on this briefly, and because it kind of cracks me up, Dave, because there was a new deal signed by the U.S. and China last week allowing U.S. inspectors to review the audit records of U.S.-listed Chinese companies, all right? And this could prevent they'll do anything to keep firms being booted off the U.S. stock exchanges and supposedly making sure that these companies are following U.S. law. And there's 260 Chinese companies that are listed on U.S. exchanges with a worth of around $1.3 trillion. Number one. Do you really believe that these U.S. inspectors are really going to find anything that would throw any of these companies off the exchange when there's a total worth of around $1.3 trillion? Highly unlikely. And do you believe, on the other hand, that China is really going to open up their books and their audit records to the United States and give them the truth? I mean, China is a communist nation. Let's not forget this. And how can we believe, you know, what they would show them and so forth? So, I mean, it's like, really? I mean, what is the point of this? Now, the deal between these two countries sort of lists one of the weights that pummeled the share prices of some of these Chinese companies over the last year and a half. I don't know. Shanghai's been doing okay. I don't know what they've been doing on the U.S. exchanges. But U.S. inspectors are supposed to be permitted to travel to Hong Kong, supposedly have complete access to audit papers and company personnel who conducted the audits. You know what, Dave?
Well,
people have too much time on their hands on this one.
You've heard the term wink, wink, nod, nod.
You got it. You got it.
I'm sure there were handshakes involved in this. I'm also fairly convinced that there were a couple of sly smiles, lack of facial contact, and like I said, a wink and a nod. I think it's possible that there could be a sacrificial lamb here for appearances. Now, mm-hmm. It could be that if, in fact, there's any kind of even rough look over of these company financials, that someone is going to say to the two sides, hey, you know, we got to make this process look good. It can't be, you know, it can't just be everything's hunky dory and we didn't find a thing. So I wouldn't, let's put it this way. I wouldn't be surprised if out of this review that, you know, there might be, who knows, $100 million company. I'm not sure all the 260 companies. I got to believe some of them are worth less than $50 million. And among them, they're going to be at least one that's chosen to be the sacrifice at the altar of Abraham. And, you know, so everyone can go on and say, whew, that was a good deal. Yeah, I agree.
And, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, but it really is a joke. Really is a joke. But
well, certainly lends credibility to that.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go ahead. You know, yesterday we talked about where California came out and said, you know, hey, you know, we're not going to be able to charge all those electric vehicles. You know, now today they're coming out and saying, hey, we're trying to keep the last nuclear power plant open. Okay. It's like it's supposed to close in 2025. I'm not sure why it's why it was closing. PG&E Corporation's Diablo Canyon.
It's getting old. I mean, it can live beyond that, but I think they're just – it's just getting old, and I think they had just decided as part of their future, California was going to, you know, take offline whatever remaining nukes were providing power to residents there.
Yeah, so they get to experience, you know, brownouts and everything else. I mean, the infrastructure is crumbling, and it's going to take billions of dollars coming and they're going, you know, probably to the federal government in order to help keep this plant going. They're going to get billions of dollars to help with the implementation of the charging stations. It's like, no, why can't these states take care of themselves? I don't care what state it is, you know, it's just, it's like these people that get into these offices really don't know. These states are beyond being managed. You know, it's just to address the issue when it comes. They're not being managed, and the money is being squandered away. I haven't looked up their pension plans, what they're doing, and so forth. But it's all the states. But, I mean, California is probably one of the worst because of the size. And it's just like, you know, this is what the – how big is the big economy in the world?
It's a fifth or sixth.
Yeah.
Largest.
And they can't manage.
I think
it's ridiculous. The
dynamic that's at play here, in my own humble opinion, one is not knowing how to use power. I mean, even the more visible candidates, for governor, let's just stick with the states, the more well-known folks have limited experience in many of them in running a government, a state government, or even a larger company in some cases. And I think they just get in and like the power they have, particularly if they can do something that is consistent with their philosophy. The other issue,
that's
the other issue at play, I think, again, ties into the division in the country and campaign finances. And so whether you're a Democrat or a Republican governor, depending on who your state legislature is controlled by, the same or an opposite party, I believe – coupled with what the other factor I just mentioned, that the desire to keep your party in power, the fear of the other party coming into power, there's been a tendency for these governors. And it's not just governors. I mean, it's almost all levels.
Know,
every level of office holding, that they want to be something or even everything to everybody. And not only is it impractical, it's impossible. But you know, they either are in denial about that, or they just don't care about it. They just gotta move forward with their.
You know, and that's the sad thing is they don't. You're right, and they don't care about the city, state, or the country in which they live, because those are more important. And you know, you said you get these inexperienced people in there, but they're supposed to be hiring those and seeking information to those who do know how to, you know, but again,
you're right.
I just think things have gotten so big that I know sometimes when things get too big, you can't manage it. It's too big to manage. And that means it's just closer to failure because it can't be managed. You can't address, and it's sad. And so there's no attempt to even try. And I think that's what we're experiencing in so many areas of, you know, when we talk about, you know, the finances and this. And it's like, how much debt, when I'm going to go back to the debt, how much more debt can they pile on? How many more fake dollars, monopoly money, can they take from the taxpayers of this country?
As much as it takes, Melody.
But there's an end to it. There will be an end.
There's an end known as the reset, if that's what you're referring to.
And how close are we to that? I mean,
I don't know.
And there's a lot of things that come with the end. And, you know, and you're right. They're gonna, you know, what I've said, they're going to print until the cows come home. They're going to keep it going. But, baby, the cows are at the barn door. And it's kind of interesting to see that. And, you know, again, they're looking for federal dollars to come in there to keep it going, to keep the power on and the people that, you know, it's just another. Now, this I found interesting, too, Dave, double cropping.
Yeah.
I wanted to look that up to see who all that really applies to, because this is the U.S. Department of Agriculture has instituted new policies. I'd like to know what some of those policies are, maybe just changing rules or how much money goes to some of these farmers to begin growing two crops on one piece of land, one after another, a practice known as double cropping. I thought we were already doing that, and I thought that's why so much of our fields have lost so much of their minerals and everything, because you're supposed to change your fields. And I'm not a farmer, but that's my understanding. So this,
yeah, that's crop rotation.
Crop rotation. So how does that differ with double cropping?
I don't know. I wish I knew more about the practice. I guess double cropping, I mean, just intuitively, it sounds like, you know, you're just, one, you're using your finite space more efficiently, all things being equal. I don't know if, you know, planting corn and soybeans, you know, on the same parcel, basically, if you can do that year after year, or how rotation plays into that to avoid, you know, a scenario where nutrients are depleted. It's a fascinating story here.
I guess the insurance rules, they changed insurance rules to lessen the risk of growing two crops. So that would have had to been, you know, because, you know, farmers do insure their crops.
Mm-hmm.
So
so do the taxpayers.
Yeah. Yeah, true. But I thought that was that. Would you like to add anything else to that?
No, not really. I think we've talked about it. Just that it's not necessarily a cure-all, because weather, for example, plays a part. Warmer temperatures, in particularly here in the South and in the lower part of our Midwest, which have longer growing seasons. That lets farmers squeeze in a fall planting of one crop, and it's usually winter wheat that falls dormant over the winter and then grows again at the first thaw and can be harvested by late spring. And that's just as farmers are planting a second crop, typically soybeans. So the problem comes when cool weather delays the spring harvest of the winter wheat, and that in turn delays the planting of the soybeans. So that's where the USDA, the Department of Ag, is saying, well, this double cropping could alleviate this particular issue, and I guess take or lessen the effect of colder spring weather.
Well, it also makes me think, it was just a week or so ago, we were talking about how short supply our fields are already. And to me, this kind of tells me that it might be more of a desperate situation by doing this, because there's been so much drought or flooding in areas. I mean, like some of these farmers and so, I mean, you know, they're just not, there's nothing there to harvest.
Yeah, clearly someone's looking for a workaround.
So either that situation is possibly more severe than what we realize in order for them to make this type of a change so quickly. So I don't know, but again, folks, you know, you got to put two and two together and see what you need to do. And because things happen so quickly. And, yeah, and I don't know where you're at, Dave, in the grocery stores, but it's shocking to see so many shelves still bare of various things. And we're just getting used to it. And, you know, it used to be like on the cans, there'd be like maybe four or five rows of cans stacked behind one another. Now it's only like one or two. And most people probably don't recognize these things, but when we talk about it and you know what's happening, it is kind of concerning. But it's also concerning that we're heading into a break and I hear the music. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. KingsofSawitRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Don't bring me down, Jay Powell. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody, taking care of other client business. This final segment, reach her at 1-800-375-4188. Our latest American Survival newsletter has once again hit the streets. Features Doug Nolan's Credit Bubble Bulletin blog on monetary management and Apothecary Herb's Wendy Wilson's Food for Thought column on electromagnetic radiation. I have an article on hiking, of all things. Yes, hiking. The Fed could learn something from the experience of vintage early 19th century hikers, Lewis and Clark. That duo's historic cross-country expedition began way back in 1804 when President Tom Jefferson directed Meriwether Lewis to explore lands west of the Mississippi that were included in the Louisiana Purchase. Lewis chose William Clark as his co-leader for the mission. Their treacherous adventure lasted over 2 years. Along the way, they faced hostile weather, unforgiving terrain, perilous waters, bodily injury, persistent hunger, disease, and both friendly and unwelcoming Native Americans. Nevertheless, their roughly 8,000-mile trek was deemed a big success and provided new geographic, ecological, and cultural information about previously unmapped areas of North America. Call their hike slow and easy. The Fed could learn from that. Now, over four centuries later, we see the Fed and many of their central banking peers doing some serious hiking of their own, form of aggressively tightening monetary policies to make up for a late start and trying to rein in high inflation and its effects. As economists and investors debate whether they're being behind the proverbial eight ball, trying to furiously catch up will throw us into recession, some new research is asking, well, what about those that started earlier? We touched on this briefly last week. Central banks in Brazil, Poland, New Zealand, and others started raising interest rates last fall. Wait. Before most of their counterparts in the U.S. and Western Europe began. And now a new report from Too Big to Fail, Goldman Sachs, studied the results in nine countries that were these early hikers for hints of how things might play out in the U.S. and the rest of the world. Axios's Courtney Brown and Neil Irwin, B&I, I'll call them, report that none of the nine showed clear evidence of being in recession so far, although two, Chile and Peru, are potentially in the midst of a mild one. B&I go on to say that strong private sector balance sheets resulting from pandemic-era fiscal transfers have enabled most of the early hikers to maintain growth momentum. Now, the Goldman report concludes that the resilience of these early hikers supports our view that no major economy will enter a monetary policy-driven recession in the coming year. That's a pretty amazing statement. given where things are across the world. They caution, however, that early hikers are mostly small, open, emerging market economies that may well have different dynamics than their larger counterparts elsewhere, most of whom waited on the hiking. And as BNI note, just because they're not in a recession now doesn't mean they won't be eventually. And with that in mind, we see another closely watched indicator sending a message across the globe that there's a major slowdown underway. It's in manufacturing and services sectors in the world's largest economies. Now, to be sure, the level of pain is different from country to country, but the trend is the same overall, and it's suggesting that economies the world over may be tipping into recession. Last week, S&P Global released its latest measure of private sector activity for a slew of countries, and almost none of them were good. In the U.S., an index of manufacturing and service sector activity unexpectedly dropped to 45 last month from roughly 48 in July. And any level below 50, again, indicates contracting activity. Service sector here logged the steepest rate of decline as producers of goods saw output drop. And activity in Japan's service sector fell into contraction territory as well, as its manufacturing sector registered the lowest reading since January. Their economy is still dealing with pandemic fallouts that's curbing consumer activity, while companies there are also facing rising material and energy costs like they are the world over. In the EU, the survey results reinforce an already shaky outlook. Output there declined yet again, with Germany and France leading the way with particularly weak activity. According to the S&P, that's pointing to an economy in contraction during this current quarter. Cost of living crisis is putting a brake on both consumer and business spending, and the lack of supply is still hurting manufacturers after 2.5 years. Commerce Bank observed, Russia is supplying only a limited amount of gas. High inflation is tearing deep holes in the coffers of private households, and companies are facing massive uncertainty. In short, the economic outlook for the economy in the Eurozone is bleak. Now, the survey of UK activity does remain a little above 50, but factory activity there, too, has experienced a bigger-than-expected slowdown. A major explanation for the global slowdown scenario is a strong U.S. dollar, which BNI note is wreaking havoc around the globe. Of course, the other side of the dollar's rebound is slumping fiat currencies elsewhere. The euro's at its lowest in 20 years, for example. The dollar's strength has its roots in the Fed's interest rate hiking campaign that's been much faster and much more aggressive than many of its central banking peers. But BNI point out that the result of the dollar's rise is increasing inflation pressures for many other countries, as their imports, which again are mainly priced in dollars, become more expensive. Plus, especially for poorer countries, dollar-denominated debt is just more expensive to pay. Now, the administration dramatically cut its forecasts for economic growth and upped inflation projections, according to new estimates published last week by the Office of Management and Budget, OMB. That's one of the consequences that's going on. It guesses that it's going to be worse before it gets better. The new OMB numbers reflect the drastically different economic reality the Biden administration faces as the fall midterm elections approach, including disruptions stemming from Putin's invasion of Ukraine. Its figures are part of the White House's mid-session review, which updates projections made in the administration's fiscal year budget for 2023, which was out in March. Some of the assumptions about the economy that you know, those budget estimates were based on were finalized as early as November of 21. Modest change since then. The latest round of forecasts even were completed in early June. They don't reflect, for example, any impact from legislation passed since then, like the Microchip Act, CHIPS, Inflation Reduction Act, as well. In any event, the White House now estimates our economy will grow 1.4% this year. That's after a decline of, well, adjusted decline of 2.2% first half of the year, and they see another plus 1.8% next year. Now, it's a big difference from its March estimates of 3.8% and 2.5%. And the White House now expects inflation, at least as measured by the CPI, to slow to 6.6% in the fourth quarter of this year. That's more than double the administration anticipated earlier in the year. On the other hand, the administration still sees inflation plummeting by the end of next year, but only to 2.8%, which I think is pie in the sky anyway, but it's a half percentage point higher than the earlier estimate. Their estimates for unemployment, largely unchanged. I mean, in fact, White House forecasts that the headline jobless rate will average 3.7% by the end of the year. That's lower by just 0.2 of a percentage point. And most notably, I believe, the White House revised down its projected budget deficit to $1 trillion for this year. It's a $383 billion reduction from its forecast in March. Higher interest rate payments on federal debt as a result of the Federal Reserve rate hikes will help push deficits up next year. They project a $1.3 trillion deficit 2023 before rising to $1.6 trillion in 10 years. Now, that's not just 1.3 plus 1.6. That means 1.3 next year and then 1.6 for each of the next 10 years. 16, 17, roughly $17 trillion. So even as the Fed methodically sends out signals that it will do whatever it has to in order to crush inflation, I'm telling you, it looks more like a veritable crash landing on steroids to me. Lewis and Clark, if you're listening, you better seek cover. Okay. Paraphrase the late 60s protest song by the great band War. I'm not going to sing this, but I'll recite it. J.P. Morgan Chase, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again. Yeah. I won't repeat that. In today's Wall Street on Parade, Pam and Russ Martin's report that since the beginning of 2017 and through 2021, too big to fail, J.P. Morgan Chase has spent $84.3 billion buying back its own stock. In 8 of those quarters, it spent more than $5 billion buying back its own shares. Oh, boy. Just crazy stuff. Now the Martins say unthinkable has happened. The Fed has actually put JPM, we'll call them that, on a leash. As a result, the bank is not currently able to buy back any more of its stock. Of course, bank shares are down at least by 28% so far this year. Martins point out that JPM is the largest bank by assets in the U.S. with about $3.5 trillion as of March 31st this year. Its closest competitors are Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and Citibank. B of A, I think, is about $2.5 trillion. So the Martins ask, why did the Fed put J.P. Morgan Chase on a leash? Well, according to the bank's most recent 10Q report filed with the SEC, the answer is this, quote, as a result of the expected increase in the capital stress capital buffer in the fourth quarter of 2022 and global systemically important bank surcharge in the first quarter of 2023, The firm has temporarily suspended share repurchases. Now, there's also this from the 10Q. Quote, as directed by the Federal Reserve, total net repurchases and common stock dividends for in the first and second quarter of 2021 were restricted and could not exceed the average of the firm's net income for the four preceding calendar quarter. Martin's calculate for the second quarter of this year, it spent $3.1 billion buying back its own stock versus 11.2 for the same period last year. It's a shrinkage of 72%. Former vice chair of the FDIC, Tom Herring, 2017, told the Senate Banking Committee this. If the 10 largest U.S. bank holding companies were to retain a greater share of their earnings earmarked for dividends and share buybacks, that was in 2017, they'd be able to increase loans by more than $1 trillion, greater than 5% of GDP. JPM CEO Jamie Dimon has the second largest holding of shares among board members, valued at $971 million as of yesterday's close. Oh, crazy stuff, ladies and gentlemen. That's all the time we have for today's program, however. I'll be back on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please stay safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.